Okay, so famous Rashis. There are so many. We'll just pick some. Bezrat Hashem. In Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov says to Lavan. Yaakov says to Esav, "Im Lavan Garti." So Rashi quotes that Garti is the gematria of Taryag. So Yaakov was saying to Esav, "Im Lavan Harasha Garti, the Taryag Mitzvos Shamarti." Vilo lamarati mimaisav haroim. I didn't learn from his evil ways. This is the ultimate Rashi. This is the challenge that we have in life. We live and grow up in the Western world, and the Western world has values that are very, very anti-Torah, and it's getting worse, and it's not getting better. And the challenge that we have is to say, look, I live in the Western world, but Tarig Mitzvah Shemarti, and it's possible, and it's doable, and we discussed over and over again how to survive as best you can, and one way is to be in yeshiva. Yaakov stayed 14 years, be yeshiva Shein Be'Aver, and you have to stay in yeshiva, and you have to work on things, and get passionate, and get inspired, and then discuss the ways to keep it going. This is the famous Rashi, Love and Garti, Vitaryag Mitzvah Shamarti. Next, later on in Pasuk Ches, it says, Vayira Yaakov Mod Vayetzer Lo. He was very frightened, and he was distressed. Like two things. What's this double thing? So what does Rashi say? Vayira Shema Yehari. He was afraid of being killed. What's Vayetzer Lo? He was distressed. Im Yaru Kuas Acherim. He didn't want to have to kill anyone else. Yaakov didn't want to have to kill Esav and his people. He was nervous about that. Why was he nervous that he didn't want to have to kill Esav? So some of the Mefarshim say that Yaakov knew Yitzchak still loved Esav. That's what they quote here. Yaakov knew that Yitzchak still loved Esav, and Yaakov didn't want to cause his father tsar, so he didn't want to end up having to kill Esav if he didn't want that either. Another pshat might be, even when you're supposed to kill someone, it still affects you. In other words, there's a danger that when you kill someone, it affects your internal world. There's a famous comment of the Netziv that the Torah gives us a special bracha of shalom by the parsha of the Ir HaNidachas. Because if you have to kill an Ir HaNidachas, so killing so many people can impact on your insides. You killed people, even though you're supposed to kill them, but it can impact on you. So there's a special bracha that you feel that you'll be okay. So Yaakov didn't want to have to kill Esav. Yaakov didn't want to have to kill Esav either. Next, Pasuk Yud Beis. Yaakov says a tefila. Hatzileini na miyad achi, miyad, Esav. From my brother, from Esav. So there's a very famous comment here. The baby says that others say it. Yaakov's afraid of Esav. Esav's the Russia. He's afraid of Achi too. When Esav acts too much like a brother and you feel too close to Esav, that's also a danger because you can be influenced and it can lead to assimilation. Sometimes when the outside world is so comfortable and it's so appealing and it's so easy to mix in, so there's a danger there as well. Right? In America, Baruch Hashem, there is relatively little Bli Ayin Hara, there's relatively little very direct, you know, physical anti-Semitism and like there was in Europe and like there was in the Christian world for 1,000 years, whatever, more than that. In America now, it's reasonably easy and pleasant to live as a Jew without massive anti-Semitism. But that's a danger. The danger is to get sucked in and to assimilate, and that's what this means. Miyad Ochi, Miyad Esav. In other words, you don't daven. Obviously, you never daven for Esav. You with me? You never daven for Tzaros. But you have to know that Achi is also a danger, the danger of being pulled in by the pleasantness, the pleasantness, Miyad Achi. Okay. Then Yaakov was left alone. What happened? Yaakov went over the river, and then what happened? What did Yaakov forget? He pachim ktanim. Vayivaser Yaakov. This is Lamed Beis Pasuk Kaf Hei. Shachach pachim ketanim. He forgot small jars. V'chazer aleim. Mikan she'at tzadikim chasen al mamonim shelo yishchu yideim begezel. Tzadikim care about... Yaakov was a multimillionaire. Why does he care about a couple of pieces of pottery? So there are two ideas here. One idea is, the Gemara says, that they don't want to come to Gezel. In other words, you never know what's going to happen. Hashem gave you money, so... whatever Hashem gave you, you don't want to have to come to Gezel, and therefore you want to keep your... On a deeper level, more fundamental, if Hashem gave you the money, it's your job to watch. We don't own anything. Hashem owns us. Hashem created us. The money that we own, this is a famous idea that many Sfarim say. I happen to know it. Rav Moshe Feinstein's Zatzal discusses it at length in his Sfarim. What's our attitude towards wealth? So the answer is that wealth is Hashem's money that He gives us distribution rights over. It's not ours. It's all, everything's from Hashem. Rav Moshe writes, that's the message of Orla. You work hard to plant and the tree grows. The first 3 years, you can't do anything with it. It's Asar Bahana even. Why? So Rav Moshe says, the message is to teach you that your wealth is not your own. It's all God's. So for 3 years you're trained that despite you planting and despite all the work and despite you and despite the irrigation and all of that goes on, the first 3 years, nothing. It's Anah too. It's not even yours. Then in the fourth year, you have to take it and eat it in Yerushalayim, you know, with Hashem's rules. And then the fifth year, then you can do what you want with it. What does that mean? That means, Rav Moshe says, Orla teaches us the proper approach to wealth. It's Hashem's money, and we have distribution rights over the money. It's like we're a guardian for Hashem's money. If you feel that way, you're not going to give up $10. Let's say you're my field foreman. You're watching my money for me. You drop a nickel. It's not your nickel to forget about. It's my nickel. You can't be mochel on my nickel. It's my nickel. If it's your nickel, okay, you leave it there maybe. But if it's mine, you can't just give it there. It's my nickel. You're watching my nickel. You're watching everything of mine. So we are supposed to view our wealth. It's Hashem's money, and we are the shomrim. We're guarding it. And therefore, if you forget the pachim tanim, what are you going to do? If you forget pachim tanim, you're going to go back and get them because they're not yours. You got to watch them for Hashem. And if we viewed it this way, then we'd give more tzedakah. Then we'd use our money for good things. When you think it's yours, you do whatever you want. If you think it's Hashem's, so this is a big yesod. This is a very important idea that Yaakov was a multimillionaire and he went back for the $10 of pottery. Because it's not your money, it's God's money that you're supposed to watch. And therefore you have to take that. That's a very important idea. Responsibility seriously. Yes. Yaakov fights with the Malach. Who was this Malach? What does Rashi say? Sorrow shall Esav. He was the ministering angel of Esav. Every nation has like its angel in heaven that like helps. Hashem runs the world, but Hashem runs the world through these Sarim. So this was the Sar of Esav. So the fight of Yaakov and the Malach was the fight of the Jewish people against the non-Jewish world that we'll discuss more of Bezat Hashem on Thursday. It was the Sar of Esav. He tried to kill Yaakov, but he didn't succeed. And Yaakov was winning. So what did the angel do? He injured him in his leg. Vayar ki lo yacholo. He saw he cannot overcome him. Vayiga bekaf yerecho. The angel, the Sar of Esav, injured him over here in his thigh. So what's the idea of the thigh? Then he was limping. So the Chafetz Chaim says a famous idea. The Chafetz Chaim says that what do the legs do? The legs support the body. You produce with your arms, with your hands, you write, you think. The legs are the physical support that gets you wherever you have to go. So what Chafetz Chaim says, that the upper body is where you learn, where you think, where you do mitzvos, and the lower body, the legs, is the physical support. Meaning, the money that supports the yeshivas. That was his famous idea. that if the Yetzer Hara sees that he can't stop people from mourning, people want Torah mitzvahs, he convinces the Baal HaBatim not to give money to the yeshivas. People have money, no, don't give it to the yeshivas. This was the Chofetz Chaim's one of his fundraising Divrei Torah, when he wanted to raise money for yeshivas. This was the fundraising Divrei Torah, that the Malach knew that if you could injure the leg and there's no money for the yeshivas, you need money for these things. You need money for the electricity, for the food, for everything, for the security here. And that's a very important idea. Those of you, Bezrat Hashem, all of you are and will be wealthy, in the sense of, if you focus on the right things, you're wealthy. You're happy you're alive. You're happy you're healthy. You're learning Torah. That's wealth. Bezrat Hashem, you get married, have a wonderful family. That's massive wealth. Then there's also monetary wealth. So some of you, Bezrat Hashem, will also be wealthy in the monetary way as well. And when you're wealthy, you better, it's a massive responsibility. Being wealthy is a very serious responsibility. You've got to use the money properly. And one way to use the money is what? Support yeshivas, stucca. That's the kaf yerecho. Without the money, the system doesn't work. Now, I want to go one step deeper. The yeshivas are going to survive. Hashem runs the world. It's going to happen. The only question is, what's the only question? Who's going to get the schus, you or somebody else? So you don't lose that zechus. Vayigach v'kaf yerecho. It's a very beautiful idea of the Chafetz Chaim. When he saw he couldn't kill Yaakov, he injured him in his leg. It's a very potent fundraising idea. Next, Yaakov meets Esav. Vayaratz likroso vayipal al tzavar vayishakeyu, when he kissed him. So there are dots on Vayishakehu. Like in the Torah, there are dots. It doesn't happen too often on Vayishakehu. So Chazal have a... So because of the dots, so the dots mean something strange was happening here. So one shot is, Esav hates Yaakov. What was the strange thing? That he overcame the hatred, and he kissed him. That's what Rashi quotes one shot. Yadua Esav sone as Yaakov. El nichmu rachamav, his mercy was warmed. He had mercy, and he really kissed him. That's one shot. That's the other shot is no. He pretended to kiss him, but really, he wasn't kissing him. He had the opposite intent. So the Medrash says that what did Esav do? What did it say? He tried to bite his neck off, and the Medrash says that Hashem turned Yaakov's neck into marble, and Esav lost his teeth, smashed his teeth on his neck. Okay. So that's what the Medrash says. So I had a shot here. I, as you know, I almost never say chidushim. I've spent 25 years trying to avoid saying chidushim. But I try to quote other people. Then I have a better chance of getting it right. Here I have my own little chidush. I asked Rav Nevensol. He said, whatever he said, I put in the book. I think he said Yefem Od. He said he liked it. So here's my chidush. Esav, is Esav in Maros HaMachpelah? His head's in Maros HaMachpelah. Oh, Kibud Avim. Oh, so it's like this. Esav, I believe, one could say, Esav, on one level, wanted to do the right thing. He wanted to have Kibud Avim. His mind was, you know, he thought more or less okay. He wanted to do the right thing, but he had a goof. He had the Yetzer Hara. And Esav is the ultimate example of someone who has zero control over his goof, over his Yetzer Hara. The mind says one thing, but the body wants something else. So Esav is the example of, there's a complete disconnect between his head and the rest of his body. His spine is like it's like his spine is jelly. There's no connection there. So what part of Esav is in Maros HaMachpelah? His head! His head was okay! He, on one level, wanted to do the right thing. Oh. So Esav's meeting Yaakov, and he wants to kill him. So he figures, what's the softest part of a person's body? What's the weakest part of the body? The neck. Because my neck is the softest, it's jelly, because there's no connection of my mind to my body. So he bites him on his neck. But by Yaakov had complete control over the Yetzer Hara. So by Yaakov, what is his neck? His neck is hard like stone. And that's what Esav couldn't imagine, a person with a neck hard like stone. He bites him in the neck, expecting to, and then his teeth fall out. I think that might be, Rav Nevitz said, I thought it was a nice shot, al derech hadrush, that for Esav, the neck was the weakest part. He thought that was the easiest place to kill someone. So Esav's head's in Maros HaMachpel, because his head was okay, but he had no control over his body. He did every Aveira in the book and more. Those are two pshatim of Vayishakehu. Next, world famous idea. When Yaakov's talking to Esav, what does he say? Yesh li kol, I have everything I need. And when Esav's talking to Yaakov, what does he say? Yesh li rav. What does that mean? What does rav mean? I have a lot, I have plenty. Not kol, I have a lot. So this is a famous idea that many Sfarim talk about. It's also in the Chafetz Chaim. By Esav, it's always a lot. By Yaakov, it's kol. If Hashem gives you what you need. Hashem gives you what you need. So a tzaddik feels, I have everything I need. I have enough money to live. Whatever I have is from Hashem. I'll use it for good things. So a tzaddik knows that whatever he has is what he needs. Hashem runs the world. And he's happy with what he has. A rasha always feels, I have a lot. I can always do with more. So a person can have a huge amount and always be unhappy. Who's the ultimate example of this? A descendant of Esav? Haman. Haman. Haman had everything. Haman was a multi-millionaire. And Haman was the second most powerful person in the kingdom. And what does Haman say? Because of the covet thing with Mordechai, what does Haman say? What does Haman say? The kol zeh, all of this, einenu shaveli. It's like worthless. That's amazing. A person could be a multi-millionaire, very powerful, and he feels he has nothing. And a person could have nothing, and have very little, and he feels he has everything. It starts from Hakaras HaTov, thanking Hashem for whatever we have. If we really had full Hakaras HaTov, it's all from Hashem. Hashem gives me what I need. And then a person's whole life is different. And you go through life saying yesh li kol instead of saying yesh li rav. Nebuch, there are people out there, very wealthy people, who are unhappy because somebody else next door is a drop more wealthy. And it's a shame. You feel bad for them. They're yesh li rav. I'm not saying they're rishayim like Esav. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this nekuda of yesh li rav, it's a shame. It you feel sorry for them. But yesh li kol, if you have the right attitude, Hashem gives you whatever you need, and that means whatever you need you have, and then your whole life is different. It changes everything, and this whole thing of keeping up with the Joneses, I'll call you afterwards, in Parnassa and everything. It really it ruins people's lives, and the earlier we focus on thanking Hashem for what we have, nothing's coming to me. The person's alive today. God gave you life today. The person gave you health today. God gave you the health today. Right? We all know, Rachmana Litzchan, Hashem can always take anything away. Lo aleinu. So it's all a gift. Hashem gives you money today, he gives you money today. It could be gone tomorrow. So the idea of like wanting more and wanting what someone else has, whatever Hashem gives you, you try to be happy with, and your whole life is different. So you become a yesh li kol person as opposed to a yesh li rav person. Around 30-ish years ago, maybe more, I was in Shalavim and I heard a shir, Rav Freund? I remember this, he was discussing the following idea. In Yahadus, we believe that just like there are physical genes, there are spiritual genes. Yeah, we discussed this year. When did we discuss the spiritual genes? We discussed it by the Akedas Yitzchak. What does our verse say? Our verse says that the Jewish people are very stubborn. What are we stubborn about? We hold on to our Masorah. No matter what happens and with the various oppressions, we're very stubborn. We're Moser Nefesh for the Masorah. Where did we get that from? What does our verse say? Where did we get that from? Who'd we get it from? Not a bad guess, but that's not what he says. Esav's not a very good guess. I'm not going to mention the names. Who'd we get it from? So Rav Hur says Yitzchak. What do we discuss? Because Avram heard the tzibu of the Akedah from, who'd Avram hear it from? Hashem. And who did Yitzchak hear it from?
Avram.
So we learned that it's in the book. The Chassam Sofer says Avram was Torah Shebichsav and Yitzchak was Torah Shebal Peh. Yitzchak was literally ready to give up his life completely based on trust in his Rebbe. That's unbelievable. Dad, are you sure? You know, God gave these brachos, Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people. Are you sure you heard? There's nothing. Yitzchak never questioned. Yitzchak heard his Rebbe say something, and he accepted it. He was Moser Nefesh, literally gave up his life for the Mesorah. So Rav Hur says, where do the Jewish people get their spiritual genes from? This tenacity, this stubbornness, it comes from Yitzchak. That's not bad. So there's also negative spiritual genes. If your roots are Tumah, you're going to end up being, you always have Bechira Chafshis, but if your roots are full of Tumah, then the chances of you not doing as well are much greater. So where did Amalek come from? So you have to read Chumash and Rashi very carefully. Yishlach. And Art School helps you out. They have a very nice family tree here in the back. So if you work out, see, there are a lot of psukim where it says so-and-so married so-and-so, and he had a child, and then it says, but she was the son of somebody else. Like, you have all these weird soap opera type things happening. So here's what it comes out. Who are Amalek's parents? So let's go. So Amalek's mother was Timna. Amalek's mother was Timna. Who was Timna? Timna was the daughter of Seir's wife. But was Seir the father? No. Who was the father of Timna? Who was Timna's father? Eliphaz. Okay, so that happens. So Timna was a mamzeres. In other words, Seir is married to his wife. We'll call him Seir. They also call him Seir's wife. You got it? There's Seir's wife. Yeah. Eliphaz was one of Esav's sons. Yeah. Now, wait. So who's Timna? Timna's a mamzeres. Eliphaz's father, Timna. Okay. So Timna's Amalek's mother. Who's Amalek's father? Eliphaz. Ooh. In other words, Eliphaz took his own daughter, who was a mamzeres already, as a pilegesh, one of his extra concubines, extra wives in a sense, and their son was Amalek. So Amalek was born mamish from mamzeres squared. In other words, Eliphaz fathers Timna, and the mother was a married woman. So Timna is a regular mamzeres. It happened, a regular mamzeres. Then Eliphaz marries his daughter, the mamzeres. Eliphaz takes his daughter, the mamzeres, and their son is Amalek. So you see the concept of spiritual, negative spiritual genes as well. It's mamish, literally, a mamzeres squared, and can lead to horrible things.